Hi, I'm Coach John Cook, and thanks for listening to today's episode of the Talkin' Hoops podcast. My guest today is Bob Galloni. Bob is the recently retired head basketball coach from Denison University in Granville, Ohio. After 18 years at the helm at Denison, Bob stepped down in March, and he will remain on as a faculty member at Denison, but he had an 18-year run at Denison and did a tremendous job building that program in the shadow of two of the all-time powers in Division III basketball in Wittenberg and Worcester. And led that program to a great deal of success during his tenure. And I think he's got a lot to offer. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Bob Galloni of Denison University. Hi, I'm Coach John Cook, and thank you for listening to today's episode of the Talkin' Hoops podcast. I am thrilled to have as my guest today, Coach Bob Galloni. Bob just spent 18 years as the head basketball coach at Denison University, Division III school in Ohio, and stepped down in March, announced his retirement from the coaching profession, and will remain on staff at Denison as a faculty member. And Bob's got experience in coaching high school and college, and spent 18 years at a place in Denison that I think is just a unique coaching opportunity because of the academic standards and I don't know if difficulty is the right word, the challenge of recruiting athletes to a place in Granville, Ohio that has those kind of standards and competes in the league that they compete in. And I think Coach Galloni is going to have a lot to share that's of interest to coaches across the board, young coaches, experienced coaches, because he's got a point of view and a story like so many that we've had here on the podcast that's just different and it's unique. And that's why we do what we do here. So, Coach Galloni, I'll bring you in. Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Doing okay. Thanks for having me, Johnny. This is a privilege. Really appreciate it.
Well, I've been very blessed, Coach, to have most people that I ask about doing the podcast have agreed to it, and I wasn't real sure what I hoped it would be when I started, but as it's turned out, I think it's just been a ton of fun sharing people's journeys. If anybody's spent much time at all in coaching, they've got a story to tell, and it feels to me like everybody's story is absolutely unique and filled with detail and incidents and events that are maybe not always fun to go through, but certainly make for a great story about how we get shaped and formed as coaches. And I don't think yours is any different in that regard. You spent 15 years as a head high school coach in Ohio before moving to the college ranks. And to be real honest with you, at the time that you made that move, I think it had become fairly rare. Maybe it wasn't a little bit before that, but I think by that time it was fairly rare to see coaches make the move from the high school ranks to the college ranks. It just wasn't a typical traditional path. And I'd like to spend some time talking a little bit about that.
Sure.
When did you know as a young man that you wanted coaching to be a part of your career?
You know, it's funny. In the sixth grade, I went to a little Catholic school, and I had a nun that taught me. Actually, she was probably the principal at that time, Sister Renee, just asked me, "What do you want to do with your life?" And I said, "I wanted to teach and coach, and I wanted to coach basketball." So in the sixth grade, I was already thinking about it. Now, my life took a lot of different turns, and in college, at one point in my life, I really thought I was going to enter the priesthood. That's where I thought I was headed. But I thought about medicine. I thought about law. And it always kept coming back to basketball. I think what happened one night when I was in college, I should have been studying for a big chemistry exam. And I spent two nights down at the old Fairgrounds Coliseum in Columbus. I was 21 years old watching high school basketball. No, nobody that I knew, just watching good high school basketball. And it kind of clicked with me. I was spending my time doing stuff like that and playing at the rec centers all the time. Maybe I ought to be doing what I really enjoyed, you know? And so got back into education and ended up coaching and teaching just like I thought when I was 12 years old.
That's eerily similar. I mean, I it's funny because I can remember being probably a seventh or an eighth grader and making the statement that I want to teach history and coach basketball. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of what I always knew I wanted to do. And when you talk about having that kind of passion or at least awareness that early in life, who would you say from that point forward, sixth or seventh grade on forward, as you got into high school and towards your college decision about where to attend and what to study, who were the people that were influences on you or maybe guided you toward that as your calling?
Well, probably the biggest influence were just my parents. You know, my dad was a fireman, my mom was a bus driver, but they always stressed to me and my four brothers find a job, find a life's work that you really enjoy that somebody will pay you for. And so that always was in the back of my mind. And they taught me work ethic and faith, and that was really important. And probably the most influence was just in the sixth, seventh, eighth grade. I had these coaches that were just blue-collar guys that coached this little Catholic school. They weren't even teachers. John Cannizzaro, who had coached my dad and all my uncles, and then he coached me and all my brothers. He was an auto worker. And then a guy named Leo Gartner, who was a factory worker. They just, it was their passion to coach kids. And I just remember how much time they put into it when it wasn't really their job. And we were never very good because we were this little Catholic school, but we were taught fundamentals from day one. And we were taught discipline from day one. And that always just kind of stuck with me. It always just kind of stuck with me. And I think that had a big influence on who I became and how I've done things over the years.
Well, and we will get into that certainly. I know that fundamentals and discipline are foundational pieces for how you've operated your program, regardless of where that was. But talk a little bit about, you know, where you went to college and what were some things, or were there some things during college that kind of set you up for that opportunity to coach either high school or college? And we'll get into the early steps in your career.
Yeah, I spent a couple of years at OSU Newark, and so I played at that branch school, which is like playing JVs, you know, at Denison or Worcester or somewhere like that. In fact, we used to play Denison's JV. It was decent basketball. I had a guy named Jeff Mills coach me who had played at Denison and was young, but I learned a lot from him. And that's when I started to really look at the game, not just as something I enjoyed playing, but playing in a certain way. And I think I got some of that from Jeff. And then got a lot of that just from playing a ton of pickup ball, because when I transferred over to Columbus to go to Ohio State in Columbus, obviously I wouldn't want to play there, but I played a lot of pickup basketball in the rec centers. That's when people still did that kind of thing. And sometimes the Ohio State guys would be in it. The Ohio State football and baseball guys played a lot, so the competition was good. But if you wanted to stay on the court, you know, you had to win. And you figured out real fast about picking guys up who you recognized were guys who were willing to do whatever it took to win. You know, it wasn't so this is kind of interesting. I really think a lot of my philosophy has just come from looking at guys and saying, okay, he may be better, but this guy will help us win more. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so I started going, I went occasionally and watched Ohio State practices, started picking up on some of that stuff. And then, you know, just ended up like anybody else. I had to student teach and volunteered to coach where I was student teaching at DeSales High School and spent a couple years there. And things kind of took off from that. Actually, my last year of college, before I student taught, the semester before, I volunteered to coach at St. Michael's Grade School up in Worthington. And that got me started. And then from there, DeSales, and things kind of took off after that.
When you were a high school player, first of all, where did you attend high school? Go ahead.
I actually went to a high school. It's not open anymore. It was a high school seminary. There were only 100 boys in the whole school. A lot of guys were thinking on going on to the priesthood. So it wasn't real big time basketball. I mean, we played a regular schedule and stuff. But had a guy that coached, had two guys that coached me, a guy named Bill Powell, who was an old time railroad guy who was just crazy. He was like a Bob Knight kind of guy, but that didn't bother me. But we changed defenses every time down the floor and, you know, real discipline stuff. And then my second year there, my last year there, a guy named Mike Healy took over, who was a really good man. And we actually ran the Drake Shuffle, which was pretty good at that time. So I picked up some good basketball, despite not playing in great competition or against great people or anything like that.
So when you got into coaching at DeSales, I mean, did you envision yourself at that point as trying to become a high school head coach? Did you think college coaching was something that you might have an interest in?
You know, I just knew I wanted to make a life out of coaching and teaching. And the thing that happened at Sale, I spent 2 years there as a JV coach, and really liked it and spent a lot of time. And like, we had some guys playing in some summer leagues, so I would go watch them play. And in one of those summer leagues, you know, which was the Police Athletic League down in the near west side of Columbus, down in the bottoms, college coaches would go, because this was a really good high school summer league. And this was, you know, the early 80s. So this is before high school teams could play together in the summer. So this is where guys went to see good players play. And I met some coaches. I met a guy named Bill McKinney, who was an assistant at Ohio Dominican at the time, and then met Dave Grew, who was a head coach at Capital University, and some other people. So long story short, what happened one summer, in the middle of the summer, was Bill McKinney, who was only about 26 years old, got the Ohio Dominican job. The head coach there left. It wasn't a very good job. They just promoted Bill, and he needed a part-time assistant. I was teaching eighth grade while I was coaching JV at DeSales. So, you know, he asked me to come on as an assistant for a couple thousand bucks a year, and I thought, what the heck, let's try this, and really enjoyed it. And spent a year there. And then, like I said, I'd met Dave Grube, who was a very successful coach at Capital University and coach at Kent State. Out there and helped them out. And again, I was coaching eighth grade, or teaching eighth grade during the day, teaching every subject, had a self-contained room. And then in the afternoons, I would be out there. So I spent a year at Ohio Dominican and then 3 years at Capital. And that's, you know, where I learned so much. Dave Grube being at his practice was like a clinic every single day. And it really, I knew, I had read about motion offense, seen teams, but didn't understand it. He ran motion, and I just fell in love with that. That became the basis of my whole philosophy offensively. And he was a man-to-man defensive guy, and that was really important to me. But I think most important, his foundation was discipline. It was about taking care of your guys, really paying attention to them, knowing what they were up to, whether it was on the court, off the court, where they were headed in their lives, all those sort of things. So I think that was huge for me.
It's actually striking a chord with me, as you mentioned, Coach Grube. I only met him once when I was a college student, but I spent 4 years as a student assistant at Ohio Northern, so I worked two for Coach Doherty and two for Coach Campoli when they the head coaches, and
they were buddies.
Their relationship with Coach Grube was really strong. And when I was working camps, Coach Grube would come occasionally when D1 guys were allowed to come and speak. He would come and speak at camp. And what you're talking about with building the foundation of discipline and connecting to your guys just really rings true, because that had a lot to do with how I was raised in coaching. And When you mentioned the quote unquote part time assistant spot, it just brings back a lot of memories. I can remember having a couple different conversations with Guy Neal at Bluffton when I was teaching high school history or whatever, and we would meet, and he would say, "What can you make as a JV coach or as a high school head coach?" And I would tell him, and he'd say, "Well, I can't pay you that much, but how much less than that can you take to come help me?" And those couple thousand dollars here and there would at the time, you know, in my early to mid 20s, that made it worth it to me. I was all in. But you got to spend 4 years then at the college level with two different programs, and after, you know, coaching some JV, talk a little bit, if you would, about the opportunity to become a head coach for the first time.
Well, what happened was I was with Bill McKinney for a year at Ohio Dominican, 2 years with Dave Grube at Capital, and then Dave left for Kent State, and Dave Secuti got the cap job, who had been the full-time assistant at Cap. I stayed with him for a year, but it was just at the point in my life where I thought, you know, it'd be nice to be in one place all day. Teaching eighth grade was fine, but man, at 3 o'clock, I needed to be at school to do this, and you felt like you were being pulled both ways, because I owed the grade school I was at something, and there were times they had stuff in the evening I needed to be at, yet I wanted to be recruiting, and I wanted to be, you know, doing my stuff at Cap. So long story short, I just thought, you know, it'd be good to be in one place. The Bishop Reedy job opened up. I applied for it. At the time, they weren't real good, and I didn't make them better for a while. But it was a good situation, small Catholic school, real middle-class, blue-collar people, good league, the Central Catholic League. So I took that job, and, you know, that's how I got started. I didn't go in it with the idea I'm going to be here forever, but I didn't go with any idea I'm looking for another job. It was just, hey, let's see where this takes us. And really, we struggled. My fifth year, we were in the district finals, and then we struggled again for a couple years. And then my last 6 years, we got really, really good, and we're ranked in the state, won two district titles, or two other. I think we were in five district title games all together, went to the state finals. But it took a while, and I was very fortunate to have an athletic director by the name of Al Allison, who had been the coach there one time. But he just said to me one day, he said, "Hey, this is a tough job, and it's going to be hard. But as long as you want this job, it's yours. Just be you." And that gave you a sense of, hey, I can get some things done here. And so we finally did. And it ended up being a good place. I still have a lot of relationships there. Still really cool for those people.
Well, and Reedy has a history now that's different, I think, at this point than it maybe was when you took the job in terms of how it's perceived. And your time there had a lot to do with that, obviously. But speak to the whole process. You said, you know, you didn't make them better right away, and having the kind of confidence that your athletic director gives you with a statement of just be who you are. I mean, you weren't a deeply experienced coach, but you had seen some things and done some things. What did being you mean in trying to establish your program at Reedy?
Well, first of all, one of the great things about Reedy was they had won 2 state titles in the early 70s, and then they had come close. They had won a couple of district titles in the late 70s. So when I got there in 87, there was still a history there. It had just been a while. So I was fortunate. A lot of alums wanted to come back and play an open gym, and I really fostered that atmosphere. Them coming back and kind of showing guys how to play, and I just started inviting Reedy's on the hilltop on the west side of Columbus, in the middle of the city. I invited every city league kid that wanted to come and play at our gym to come to our gym. And so we had guys, you know, Kevin King, Michael Redd came a couple times, Torrey Kershaw, and then later on, Mark Patterson and Artie Saunders. All those guys ended up being Division I players or junior college players. And they played in our gym. And at first it was tough for our kids because our kids, I mean, my thing was you win, you stay on, you lose, you're off. Our kids lost a lot of games, and I got a little bit of pushback from parents down there. Well, really, kids aren't getting to play all the time. They got to learn to win. But we did. And between the alums coming back and these other guys in the city, and I treated everybody the same. You know, it was like if you're not on time, you don't play. By the time I left there, we were having open gyms at 7 in the morning on Saturday mornings, not because I was a tough guy, because then I didn't have to worry about getting thrown out of the gym by baseball or volleyball or bingo or anything else that gym was used for. And if you weren't there at 7, you didn't play. And all these city kids, you always hear Columbus City kids, oh, they're rough. They are, you know, they're this or that. I love those guys, and I still see them. I still run into them on the street. Those guys would be there at 10 till 7 when I got there from doing my paper out with my daughters. We'd open the gym. I'm not lying. People think I'm exaggerating. We would have 40 guys there on a Saturday morning going at it on 2 side courts. And it was awesome. And that's when we just got good over the years. So that was one, is really that kind of that playground mentality of winners stay on was really imbued in our guys. And by God, you just had to play your ass off. There wasn't a bunch of talking. You pull your shorts up and just shut up and play. And that was probably the first thing that I instituted that really became part of it. I think the second thing was having camp every summer. You know, I didn't have any control of the grade schools. We had like 6 or 7 little Catholic grade schools that were coached by dads, which can be good or bad. So I didn't have any control over it. But what I did was foster a relationship with those kids and with the coaches, and went to their games on weekends, or they played at Reedy sometimes. But got them on my side. And it's funny, a kid that played for me that scored 1,000 points at Muskingum College by the name of Mike Mulmer, just a great 5'9 guard who could really play and was a good player for Jim Burson all league for 3 years. Mulmer told me one time, I remember I asked him one time, he was a really good little athlete. There was talk about, oh, he's going to go to St. Charles, he's not coming to Reedy. When he comes to Reedy, he ends up being all league for us a couple years and a great player. And I said one time, I said, Mouse, you know, we were bad all those years you were coming to watch us play. Why'd you come here instead of going to St. Charles? He goes, oh, coach, you know, I always knew we were going to win when I got there. He said, heck, I'm in the 5th, 6th grade sitting in the stands every Friday night. You guys are getting your butts kicked. You're getting 2 technicals. I just figured the refs were screwing you over. That was exactly what he told me. And so he ends up coming, you know, guys coming. So I built relationships with those people. And in camp, every summer, we would run motion offense. We played man-to-man defense. Zone was a 4-letter word, all that kind of thing. They bought into that stuff. They bought into taking charges and diving on the floor. And over the years, that became who we were. And it really paid off in a big way, you know, the last 5 or 6 years I was there.
Well, it's outstanding to hear that. I do think that, you know, there have been some changes in the game and what coaches can do and time you get to spend with your teams. But the value in having an identity that you buy into and build from, that the players take ownership of, when it's not, you know, your name on the front of a jersey in a competitive environment with officials and those kind of things, I think there's something to be said for getting that established. I really do, and obviously it paid off.
Pat Murphy, who's the head coach at DeSales now, had a team that might have won the state had we not got shut down, but he played on our district runner-up in 92, a good player. But he told me this a couple years ago. He said, you know, Coach, there wasn't a time I was on that floor that I didn't look to the left of me or look to the right of me and knew that if there was a loose ball or a charge opportunity, every one of us would try to do it. And he said, sometimes I'd look to my left and see a guy that I wasn't very good friends with. Or sometimes I'd look to the right to me and think, well, I don't know about this guy, but I knew this, they would do those things. And that made me feel really good because we build a program on the basis of things anybody can do. It's a matter of everybody's got to do those. Now, we'll decide who's going to shoot the ball. We'll decide, you know, whether we want to pick up full court or half court. But you guys have all got to do these kinds of things. And that's a big thing. And I think Reedy still has that reputation. Playing hard, really getting after people is a big deal to them. They have to play in the league they play.
Well, and I like hearing you make that statement because I've said this before that, you know, when I was a student at Ohio Northern and serving as a student assistant, my third year, we won the national championship for Division III, and it was a great experience. It was a wonderful experience, but, you know, we won the national title because we had a couple of kids transfer in, one that we knew was coming and one that we had no idea was coming, who ended up being a great player and a national player of the year before he was done. But I've said this before, getting those two guys got us over the hump. But part of the reason we won a national title in 1993 is because from 90 to 93, those 3 years leading up to that, when we didn't quite have the talent, we were still doing things the way champions do them. When the talent got there and it meshed together, then we the sky was the limit. But we were already doing things like champions do them. We just weren't good enough early on.
That's right. And that's one of the things I sold the Reedy kids on. You know, when I got there, there was a lot. The league was really tough. You had Worley, who at that time was in the South End, only had about 200 kids, but they were nationally ranked every year. And then you had Watterson, DeSales, and St. Charles, all twice our size. So we kind of had this victim's mentality of we can't compete with the big boys. And finally, I just convinced these guys, you're high school players. It doesn't matter whether you're Division 1, 2, 3, or 4. You're high school players. Damn it, act like it. And that's the point where my last 4 or 5 years, those guys were going to open gyms around Columbus at the Hilliards, at the Upper Arlingtons and stuff, sometimes getting their ass kicked, sometimes winning, but they learned how to compete as high school players. And I remember in the summers, we'd loaded up when we were finally allowed to play as a team, and we would play the Brookhavens and the Upper Arlingtons and the Westlands and anybody wanted to play. And I didn't care if we got beat or not, but convinced our guys, your high school guys just like them. Let's go and see what happens. And so now, when you get in the Division III tournament, it's a little different story. You guys are used to playing against the best competition. But it's convincing. And we used to say that to our guys at Denison. You're college players. You're not Division III players. You are college players. You ought to be able to go to Ohio State and go to an open gym and know nobody's going to think you're a Buckeye, but you aren't going to stick out like a sore thumb either because you know how to play and you've got skills. And that's the truth. I mean, I think that's something. You're a basketball player. Act like it.
That if no one listening to this podcast takes anything else away, I hope that that's something that gets repeated. You're a basketball player at whatever level, go act like it. I think that's incredibly important. And as you're going through those growing pains, you said in your first 3 or 4 years trying to get the program where you want it to go, did you have confidants in the coaching profession or quote-unquote mentors, guys that you leaned on to bounce ideas off of and get encouragement from or get some help from just in the off season? Were there guys that you spent a lot of time talking with?
Well, obviously, Dave Grew, he's a godfather, one of my daughters, and we still talk every month or so. He's one of the great human beings I've ever known. So stay in touch with him. And of course, he was a guy that no matter what, hey, you're doing the right stuff. Keep playing good man-to-man defense. Keep running motion offense. So, yeah, I would talk to him. My best friend at Reedy was Joe Lang, who is going to enter. He's like 40 years he's been the girls coach there. He coached my daughter and he played on 2 state champions at Reedy. So he was a great resource about how to get things done at that school. What he went through as a player when he played on those state champion teams, he would talk to our guys. So he was a great one. And I think the other thing I did, I had relationships with a lot of high school coaches, a guy named, Jack McMullen, who was at Columbus Academy when they won the state in 1980. I would talk to him because he had gone 0-18 one year there and then ended up having a great program the rest of the time there. Talk to people like that, Mike Winters and Ed Watterson, just about how to do things. And guys were very open. And then on top of that, the other thing I did, I just went and visited college coaches and went to college practices before we would start practice. So I saw Bob Knight in the Indiana practice every year for probably 10 years. I went down and saw Huggins in Cincinnati and Larry Hunter when he was at Wittenberg and OU. Gene Casey, just trying to pick up ideas and see how things were done. And the thing it kept coming back to, these guys were all successful coaches. You saw the same, basically the same practice in terms of the discipline, the fundamentals, the attention to doing things the right way. You know, I don't know that I ever went to a practice where I just saw the ball rolled out. And so that was a big influence on me. Got to know a guy named Al Bowen after he retired. He had been the head coach at Central High School in Columbus for years, was kind of a legend, did a lot with less at that high school. And he was a crusty old man and kind of a pain. One time I got a call from him on a Sunday morning, and he said, "Hey, saw you at Mass this morning." I said, "Oh, great, coach. How you doing?" He goes, "You got there late and you left early," and he hung up on me. That's the kind of guy he was. But he used to come to our practices once in a while at Reedy. He was delivering flowers then in retirement. He was an old City League dude, and he would let my guys know when they were doing things right or wrong. He didn't care what I thought or anybody else. So, yeah, I had a lot of people like that. And I think the thing I found out in this profession, if you reach out to people, 90% of the guys are willing to share anything with you. Most people, there are some, but most are not paranoid about, gee, you're going to steal this good idea and you might end up beating them someday. They don't care. You know, they want to make things better. You know, Guy Neal, we were just talking about him a little bit. What a great resource. And a guy, you know, I got to know years ago when we were both coaching JV teams at Capitol and Baldwin Wallace, and we've got a relationship till now. So yeah, when we were struggling, there were guys like Al Bowen, my athletic director, Joe Lang, Dave Grubb, who I knew I could call at any time and get advice, a little encouragement. Maybe sometimes I was just feeling like I needed a pat on the back. I don't know, but they were great about that kind of stuff.
Well, I tell you, Coach, I mean, I probably sound like a crotchety old guy when I say this, and I'm not taking anything away from the benefits of technology, but because of YouTube and different resources that are out there, I a lot of young coaches are just grabbing video, grabbing clips of stuff and trying to build off of that. And I think there's a lot of value in that, but I think we've lost something in coaching at times when guys don't go talk to other people that have been there, done that, tried some
Absolutely.
Things.
John, I think so. We're losing the human element. And honestly, I'll be quite honest. I think getting away from having really competitive open gyms, whenever, you know, when your kids don't always play together, maybe they've got to learn to fit in with somebody else. And my last year at Reedy, we were allowed, you know, that was 2002. So we were about, I don't know how many years into where your team could play together, 7 or 8 years. We did some shootouts in the summer and stuff. I still tell people the thing that made us best was Saturday morning open gyms, where our guys, they didn't all play together. They just divided up into teams, and winners stayed on. Our guys got really competitive through that. And our young guys got really competitive through that because they wanted to play, and they learned how to play. And I would purposely tell my older guys, you're not all going to pick up the 5 seniors. Well, that's who's going to play together this year. Maybe. We'll see. But you're going to, I want one of you picking up that freshman. Well, we might not win. You better figure out a way to win with him. You better figure out, you know. And that's how we got good. And I think some of this old, I think that video is great. I look at Coaching Toolbox every day, get some ideas. But the point is, I think not the relationship part that you build with other coaches. And I think learning how to play in an open gym situation where nobody's there to bail you out are two things that high schools have lost that I tell guys all the time, I'd do those things if I were you. That's the kind of thing I would do. And people look at me like, well, that's nothing. Yeah, no, it's everything if you really stick to it. I agree with you. I think we've lost a little bit. But I'm sounding old.
Well, I agree with you. And I do think there are a lot of guys out there that could gain from taking that approach, and hopefully some will. We're about 2 minutes here. I'm going to go ahead and take our break now. When we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about your last year at Reedy when you get to the state finals, and then spend the rest of our podcast talking about building your program there at Denison.
Okay, great.
All right, we'll take a quick break and be right back. Thanks again for listening to today's episode of the Talking Hoops podcast. I'm your host, Coach John Cook, and my guest is Coach Bob Galone, recently retired head coach from Denison University. We've gotten through Coach's journey in high school coaching right before the break, and I intentionally set the break to where we could talk about your last year at Denison, or excuse me, at Reedy, when you've spent 15 years essentially building this program. to get to the place where, let's face it, if you go into high school coaching, where you want to end up is in Columbus in the state Final Four. Talk a little bit about that final team that you had at Reedy and that experience.
Well, that team had been sophomores in 2000 when, and a lot of them dressed or played some varsity that year. When we went to the district, won the district, and then got beat in the district or in the regional semis, but really good team. And I had four or five guys go on. One guy went on and played college football and then played in the NFL. And a couple others played Division II. So it was a good team. So we were ready the next year to be really good. And in the middle of the summer in 2001, our best score, one of our two best players transferred to play football somewhere else. It was a tough situation because I was close to the kid. But anyway, things happened. Well, we still end up going 19-5 and got beat in the district semis by the number, or district finals by the number one team in the state, Morrill Ridgedale. So I knew we were going to be pretty good coming back. We had a guy, a kid named Deshaun Harper, who was first team All-State as a junior, and a whole bunch of guys who'd been sophomores on that team 2 years before, played as juniors. We were going to be good. And I had never done this before. We had a team meeting in May, like we always did, to set up the summer. And I was walking around the room talking to them, and I'm passing out to them postcards, and their postcard of the Schottenstein Center. And boy, their eyes lit up. And I said, guys, I'm doing something I've never done. I usually talk things down. I'm a pessimist. I think we might be able to get here because of the way you responded this year when we lost our leading scorer to a transfer. We still end up 19-5, all that. And their eyes lit up. And then near the end of the summer, we get a transfer, a kid from one of the Hilliard schools transfers as a senior. He was a good player and a good kid. He'd hung around with our kids, been coming to our gyms forever. And I actually tried to talk him out of transferring. I said, look, you're going to have to pay tuition. Nobody was getting away with not paying tuition in our place, just the way it was. I can do that. I said, you are not going to get fit. He was going to get 15, 20 shots a game in his other school. I said, you'll be lucky to get 10 here. I'm just telling you, don't do it. You got to wear a tie. I sat and tried to talk him and his dad out of it because I just said, I don't want to screw things up. And finally, he looked at me and said, Coach, I get it. I want what you got. I said, what do we have that you want? He said, you got guys, 40 guys in the gym at 7 in the morning. You got guys that lift weights immediately after that. You got guys that go looking for play and all the time. You got guys that shit. So, you know, I said, this is up to you. I don't want anything to do with this. So he ends up transferring, and that helped us out. A good 6'2" guard who ended up playing a couple years at Tiffin University and was a good player. But we had a whole bunch of other guys that weren't the biggest names. Harper was an All-State kid. Justin Brown ended up being a double-double guy at Ashland University for 2 years. The rest of the team was a whole bunch of guys that just cared about winning and cared about being good. And then we had the transfer, James Ball, who ended up playing Tiffin. But so it started out with that meeting in May, me saying to them, hey, I think we can be this good. So we played together all summer, you know, at different shootouts and things, and I don't know that we lost a game or two, you know. And really had a good attitude going into the year, and the guys were excited. I was excited. And we start the year out 3-2. And I'll never forget this. We were playing down at South, a City League school in Columbus. I like to play some of those schools, and they played at that time on a little stage. It was a tiny little gym. We're up 10 with about 4 or 5 minutes to go, but we were sloppy. We were turning the ball over, taking some questionable shots. So I took a timeout, and I said, look, we got about 5 minutes to go. We're up, but hey, guys, we're not playing well. And these guys are athletic and tough, and they know how to guard. They're going to come at you. We got to take care of the damn ball and win this game, but we're going to have to really play well together. And I'll never forget this. A couple of – Coach, we got this. They had never talked to me like that. I mean, it was almost like, are you kidding me? We end up getting beat. And then we go over to Springfield in a holiday tournament and get beat by a pretty good Madeira team by about 10. So we're 3-2 and the guys are down. And so we have a team meeting. And basically what came out of that was they were already looking forward to playing in the state tournament. And I'm like, everything we've ever done here has been about a process, guys. You know, you can't leap from summer so let's enjoy every darn game. And if you look at the schedule that year, you go back and look at scores. We had some overtime games early in the year that we won. We had a lot of close games, but we managed to win them. And then we got on a roll. We were really playing well, and those guys got after it. And we only had one more real hiccup. We got beat at Westland, a big Division I school on our side of town, because It turned into a grudge match. We knew their guys. They knew our guys. And again, it was one of those nights where in the first quarter, I knew we were going to get beat because I pulled a kid off the floor and he gave me a little bit of lift and he never talked back to me in his life. I just said, sit down. He didn't play the rest of the game. He didn't get through a screen or something. I said something back. The bottom line was we lost our focus and then we went 1, 7, or 8 more in a row and, you know, whatever. So the point is, what I'm trying to make is it was a group of kids that really understood how to win. They got off track now and then like any kids will, but the minute you got them back on track, they were fine. And then I remember in the middle of that season, Harper, our captain, 2-time All-State player, player of the year that year in the state of Ohio Division III, came to me and he said, hey, man, you need to toughen up. I go, what are you talking about, Deshaun? He goes, we haven't done a dive on a loose ball drill or a charge drill forever. And I said, well, we get that done during practice. He goes, nah, we're getting a little bit soft, coach. So we had about 10 minutes left to start practice. This was my captain, leading scorer, the dude, and he's the one telling me. So, the point of all that is the loss to South, the loss to Madeira, the loss to Westland all made us better and got us refocused and realigned to where we needed to be. But the best story about that team that defines who they were, because they really gave a damn about each other and they really gave a damn about winning, is we were having a big pep rally before the Final Four. So we win the district. We had two easy games in the sectionals. We won both games by 40. We go to the district. We have two tough games. We win by, I think, 9 and maybe 2. Then we get in the regional against two really good teams. We win both of them by 21-22. We're rolling and playing well. So we have a big pep rally scheduled at Reedy. We're going to leave for the Final Four on Friday morning, Friday afternoon. So we have a pep rally scheduled. So Joe Lang, who played on 2 state champions at Reedy in 72 and 73. He's the girls coach at Reedy. He's had unbelievable success, won 500 games. He does all the announcing and all the stuff for school. So he's going to announce pep rally. So he comes to me, and we're really good friends, very good friends. He comes to me and he goes, look, I know you aren't going to like this, but I think you need to do it. And I go, what? He goes, I want to introduce your team. I want you to have them put their practice gear on, have them come out, we had about 8 guys who could dunk it easily. You know, have them dunk it. The guys can't dunk. Have them shoot a 3. The kids will love it. Your guys, I said, Jerry, that's just not us. No, we ain't doing it. Bob, goddamn it, I'm telling you, you need to do this. You've been hard on these guys. They're good kids. They're all 3-point steal, all the whole bit. So I give in. So I call the guys down to my office, and I said, hey, here's what Mr. Lang thinks we need to do. I want you to go get your practice gear on right now. You're going to do this. Just don't be too goofy, but put on a show for everybody. It'll be fun. Da, 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 da. Okay, cool. So I'm sitting in my office. I'm a guidance counselor. I'm sitting in my office getting ready, and I get a knock on the door. And one of my seniors, David Strecker, just a great kid, a great defender who had shut a kid down in the regional so we could win that game, and a kid that sacrificed his own talents to make us better. But anyway, he knocked on the door. He said, Coach, can I talk to you for a second? I said, sure. So what's up? He goes, Coach, we ain't doing that dunking stuff. I said, what? He goes, the seniors got together. That would be fun, but you know what? That ain't us. It ain't what we've done all year. And honestly, tell Mr. Lang, with all due respect, when he announces us, we don't want our individual names announced.
Wow.
And we're going to walk in together. There were 12 of them dressing. We're going to walk in together. That would be cool. You know, I get goosebumps, so I feel that, because you feel like, hey, we made an impression on what's important, and that's helping. So that was the best thing about that team. They could really play, but it was because they played all the time together in the summer and individually doing individual drills. It's because they valued toughness and defense and diving on the floor and that kind of stuff. And because when they got off track, like all 17-year-olds will at some point, they were willing to get back on track. And then they were just together. So that kind of defines that year for us.
Well, it speaks to something that I've always felt as long as I've been around coaching, is that I think oftentimes what makes special really possible is that level of buy-in. You can't make kids do that. That's buy-in that gets kids to talk that way and behave that way. And I think that's when special things happen.
Yep.
But the next question I have is, as special as that year was, and you end up in the state finals in Division III, talk about the decision to move on, and how did the Denison opportunity come about, and how bittersweet was it to make that decision to make that move?
Well, it had come about the year before, actually. And the only reason it came about is I knew the athletic director at Denison. He had been a trainer, the head trainer, and then the assistant athletic director at Capital when I was there. So I had a little bit of a relation. He liked me from that time. I've been an assistant there. So when the job opened up a year before that, I actually called him in the summer and said, would you ever consider hiring a high school coach? He goes, not really, but I would consider hiring you. You've got some experience. I know how you do things. That's a possibility. So I actually interviewed for the job the year before, and they drug their feet on it. And so so this is the summer before the state championship run. So I interviewed that summer, kept it quiet, just wanted to see what would happen. They drug their feet. They end up offering me the job like August 1 or 2. And I took about 24 hours and I said, no, I can't do it. I've been with those guys all summer. There's no way. It was my daughter's senior class. She was buddies with all these guys. So I turned the job down. I just said, I can't do it. It just ain't going to work. Wow, and I was resigned to the fact I'm going to be at Reedy the rest of my life. And that was fine with me. I liked it there. I had had a place there. We were good. We were going to continue to be okay. You know, I wasn't too worried about it. So we end up, you know, having the year we're having. And on March 1, I open up the paper and see that the Denison coach had been there 1 year, decided to leave. And I thought, now I'll call them, you know, at the end of the year, but they're probably going to tell me to go to heck. You know, I turned it down once and I understand. It's no big deal. So I'm just sitting there. All of a sudden my phone rings and it's the AD at Denison saying, do you think you'd still be interested? You know, we just lost our head coach. I said, yeah. And I said, my only thing is, though, I'm not coming in and interviewing Dawn. Now, I can't lose my focus, you know. And so we had a gentleman's agreement. I'd take the job when the season ended, whatever that was. But I just was not going to go through a whole bunch of stuff and cheat the team. They knew who I was and this and that. So that's how I ended up getting the job. Actually, I turned it down once. But the decision, I think it was just I wasn't looking. I wasn't going to go to some big suburban high school and teach and coach. It just wasn't me. I really liked it at Reedy, but I had loved my time at Capital with Dave Grube and Scooty and working with those guys, and loved one of the year I coached at High Dominican. I just liked college basketball. I was 45 years old, and I thought, man, why not take an opportunity and see if this will work or not? So it was a little bittersweet because I really cared about Reedy and still do. Actually, there have been games where I've been recruiting. I remember one time I was at a game recruiting a Watterson kid playing Reedy. And somebody came and sat with me and they said, man, it must be hard for you to sit here and be neutral and not rooting for Reedy. I said, are you kidding me? I hope the hell the kid from Watterson scores 40 and I hope Reedy beats him by 40. That was my dream. And I let the kid know that, and we didn't get him. He went, I was probably a stupid thing to tell him. But I still bleed blue and silver. Those people are really good to me. But the chance to coach college basketball, the chance to be in a small academic school that's really good, was a great opportunity. And it was hard. It's a hard job. It was tough on me for a while. I was wondering for a while if I was going to keep my job. But did enough of the right things, I think, and then we got it turned around. But it was much like Reedy. We had a lot of bad years, a lot of tough years. But somehow, you know, people stuck by me, and we got some things going. And, two things really kind of happened around 2011, I guess, 2012. I hired a young assistant, Chris Sullivan, who's now the head coach, who had no coaching experience, had played at Wittenberg, was an All-American there. When he first called me with interest in the job, I wanted to say, are you kidding me? You know, I need, you know. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought this might be exactly what I need. Somebody that's played the winning program. Our guys know who he is. I wanted somebody that had his own ideas, but also didn't need somebody that knew it all. Just needed somebody that was going to hustle and really work at it. And I just liked his personality. And at the same year, I hired a guy that had spoken to our phys ed faculty by the name of Kevin Toohey. Kevin Toohey was a life coach. He was working with corporations. He was working with Miami of Florida football. He was working with Major League Baseball players as kind of a life coach, kind of a different dude. He had coached college. He'd been an assistant in college and a head coach in NAIA school. He was from New Jersey and played junior college and college basketball in Jersey. Interesting guy. So found some extra money and hired him to work with my team that year. And he became kind of our guy. And he came in maybe twice that year and actually worked live with our guys, but all our guys had his email and phone number, were able to work with him. I talked to him once a week for 5 years. You know, uh-huh. So the cool thing was he was a consultant who didn't, he never left you. If you called him at 6 in the morning, he was back with you at 6:15. So long story short, so I hired this young assistant that had some good ideas and just helped the relationships with my players, help with recruiting, hired Kevin Toohey, let him do his thing, and kept doing the things we'd always done at Reedy in terms of building team and toughness and everybody's important if you're with us, you know, that kind of thing. And it still was hard. College basketball is hard. You know, at Division III, how many guys you start with their freshman year, how many end with their senior year, you know, guys quit and all that. But in 2012, we went to the conference. We ended up the year, I think we were 12 and 13, went on the road to Wabash, who'd been nationally ranked most of the year, knocked them off, went to Wittenberg, we're playing in the conference semis, they're ranked nationally, they're the host, they won the conference that year, we're up 22 at halftime, end up beating them, got beat in the conference finals by 2 by Worcester, and we had a shot at the rim with 3 seconds to go that we missed. And that kind of got us going. Now, you know, our years after that, we had some 500 years, but then, you know, kind of like you guys at Northern in 2016, got a you know, we've been doing the right things. They've been very competitive, been to the conference finals, all that. And had some good leadership. Had a kid named Sean Carlin, who literally played 40 minutes in 4 years for us. Kid from Massillon. Long story short, he was the best leader we ever had, and he hardly ever got to play. But he bought into all the Toohey stuff and all my stuff. And so all that stuff kind of came together. And then we get a transfer from Asheville by the name of Jed Spielman, a Newark Catholic kid, who ends up being All-American for us. And so in 2015, we go 500. 2016, we end the regular season at 14-11. We host a conference tournament game with Wittenberg, beat them at home. Go up to Ohio Wesleyan, who's the host of the conference tournament, knock them off in the tournament after being down 10 at halftime or something like that. Win, go beat Worcester in the conference finals. We're down 16 with about 15 minutes to go. End up and win in overtime. Win the conference tournament, go to the NCAA. The next year we go 22-5, don't get in the NCAA tournament. And not getting that large bid, that's another story. Then we go 15-12, and then had a rough last 2 years, been a little bit rough, but still doing things right. We're in the conference semifinals this year. So for the last 5 years, we've been in the conference semis, which, you know, I don't want to make too big a deal. That's what Wittenberg and Worcester do every year. But we had not been doing that. And it was kind of become a thing with our guys. They understand we've become very competitive. And I think Chris will take the program, you know, to even better places. I think he's got a chance to really get things going. So that's kind of the story. Yeah. But did it with the same kind of thing we just did at Reedy, just really stressing teamwork and all that kind of stuff. But it's a little harder. You got kids coming from all over the country. Only 70% of our kids are from out of state at Denison. So trying to put guys together, where at Reedy, I had guys that knew me from the time they were in the fourth grade on. These guys are getting to know me when I'm recruiting them, and that's hard. The average student is a 3.7 with a 1,300 SAT. That's average getting into Denison.
And so that's
68,000 a year to go there.
Yeah, right. 68,000 a year, that kind of academic requirement. Obviously, the challenges at Denison present themselves. They are what they are. I also would like you to speak just briefly, if you would, to that recruiting piece, because with the high level of academic standards that you have and a lot of schools that are in this similar position to Denison, you also have a lot of kids making their college decision really, really early. When you're recruiting, how much of your recruiting is getting out to high school games when 70% of your roster is not from Ohio? How much of it is done by video only? And how many years would you say maybe your recruiting class is done and established by January?
Well, it was a learning process, because when I was at Capital, we recruited all Ohio kids. And that was my, when I came to Denison, I noticed they didn't have many. Why wouldn't you recruit Ohio? It's a great state to recruit. Well, I found out real fast, there's 20, you know, and I knew this. I just thought I could outwork people, but there were 25 other Division III schools in the state. Other than Kenyon, Case, and Oberlin, all are cheaper and all are easier to get into. You know, so you're fighting some things. So finally, about my fourth year there, I decided we got to start really recruiting nationally, not waiting for some of those kids to come to us and not keep being number two or three in line when we recruit Ohio kids. And And that was about the time a guy named Mike Weinstein in Chicago put together something he called an academic elite camp. And people are doing it all over the country now, where guys, young men who think they want to play at a really good academic school, whether it be an Ivy school, a military school, a Patriot League school, or a great Division III school, you have to have a three, you know, these camps, you typically have to have a 3.0 and 1100 SAT just to get in them and be a decent player. And this guy in Chicago started this, and I got a recruit out of there by the name of Larry Farmer, who ended up being a four-year starter for us and an all-league player. His dad had been the coach at UCLA at one time, the whole nine yards. But it came from going to things like that. And in the summers, so we did our busy work in the summers, really getting out to Chicago, to Louisville, to Cleveland. You know, Chris Sullivan, Sully went out, about every third year he'd go out west to San Diego and check things out. And that's how we got started getting on guys like that. Now, during the season, we still want to recruit Ohio kids. We just were a little more selective in knowing who we could go after and trying to gauge interest at an early time so we weren't spinning our wheels. But our best teams have been Ohio players and our best players. Devon Hale from Northland, Alex Longy from Cincinnati St. X, Jed Spielman, David Muir from New York Catholic. You know, those guys were really good players and all from Ohio. But most of our kids were going to come from out of state. So we had to do a lot with seeing kids in the summer, do a lot with video and talking to high school coaches on the phone, you know. And then these last 4 or 5 years, quite honestly, John, we really, our school has become more and more selective, has become higher ranked. So now the whole school, they're trying to get more kids to go early decision. So we had to kind of take that. And so each year, we would usually have two, three, four kids wrapped up at the end of November, and then try to get a couple more, whatever our needs were for that year, by the regular decision deadline. So all those things kind of came together, but it was a lot of work. But it's not necessarily a bad thing, it's just negotiating it. You know, that's why a lot of schools, the higher academic D3 schools in this country, that's how they operate, and most of them get their kids early decision. In fact, some of them will even tell kids, if you don't go early decision, we're done with you. We can't wait to hear from you, no matter how good you are. That's a real interesting process.
Yeah, I just find the whole thing fascinating. I really do. I obviously had some experience at some different Division III places, and everybody's got their challenges, but that was part of the questions of what I had sent you early on, was just the learning curve and adjusting to that. And it sounds like an ongoing adjustment, because things are going to continue to change and evolve, particularly as you compete for those kind of kids academically.
It really is. And if I had it to do over, I would have done a better job of talking to more people early about what do I need to do. And I had talked to Mike Sheridan, a bit of the coach at Denison, and he recruited Ohio kids that were typically not from Central, more from far northeast, far southeast, maybe Western PA. He was already starting to do some of that. He felt that was a way to get some kids at Denison, that when you get them on campus, see the beautiful campus, the academic programs and all that. Because the problem is, so many people, there are so many Division III schools in Ohio, and they're all decent schools, but people think Denison and Ohio Northern are the same school. They're completely different schools. And I'm not going to say one's better than the other, but they're different schools, and you've got to play out those differences and to find kids who want what you have. So that was a bit of a learning curve. And honestly, over the years, we got decent at it, but it's still a challenge, because all the good Division III's are trying to get all the kids that have the grades to get in and all that sort of thing. And a lot of these kids, you know, come to you originally, their parents want this kind of school. You know, we had, this year, I think 3 kids from California on the team, you know, from the San Francisco area. How are you finding those kids? Well, two of them contacted us first, and then we went from there. So it's an interesting process.
Well, that's an interesting fact to learn, because I got to be honest, when we were preparing to play you, I can remember having that conversation. How the hell did they get 3 kids from California to end up in Granville?
Yeah.
It's a beautiful, gorgeous campus that you guys have. Your campus and your community is absolutely movie script college look. I mean, it's beautiful, and you've got a great place to offer, and obviously a place that's competitive and difficult to get into. And what you've done there, I think, is just a fascinating and intriguing story, and I'm glad you got a chance to tell it. I've got just a couple more questions I'd like to ask, and one of them may put you on the spot a little bit. Is that all right?
Sure.
Let me say, put the question this way. If you spent your 15 years at Denison that you did, and you go back to 2016, the year that you win the conference tournament, get into the NCAA tournament, all of the things being equal, the next year you go 22-5 but don't get in, which is a whole, we could do a whole podcast on the difficulty of getting in to the NCAA Division III tournament if you don't win your conference tournament. At-large bids are really difficult. However, the question I have is this: if you could make all things equal, knowing all that, but go back to 2016 and for some reason you lose that conference tournament final game, would you feel drastically different about your time at Denison without that championship to your name?
Probably not. I mean, that's a big thing, and it's important. And God, you've looked at my all-time record. I've lost more games in high school than I won. I've lost more games in college than I've won. I've been lucky to keep the two jobs I've had. And I've done a lot of the right things. I know that. But I don't think so. That, we could have easily lost that opening game to Wittenberg. I think that was a 5-point win. That was a great college basketball game. But I don't think so. I mean, that team did a lot of things well during the year and got better. And then we kept getting better, and we thought we had a shot to win the conference tournament. Then we lose on the last day of the season, when we have like a 8-point lead with 4 minutes to go at Allegheny, we end up losing the game. And we still got to host a game. But I don't think I would feel a ton different. Honestly, I don't want to sound cliche, but the greatest thing about coaching is relationships. And I still talk with those guys. We have an alumni game every year at Denison, and we get 30 guys back for every alumni game at least. In fact, for a while, until this year, because we had a JV team up to the last couple of years, we were playing two alumni games. We had so many guys that wanted to play, and I had guys bitching about not getting enough playing time. So we had an alumni game where the older guys played against each other, and then we had an alumni game where the younger guys would play the JV. And we had to change that because we didn't have a JV the last 2 years. We decided to go a different route with recruiting. But the point is, that stuff's important. I think there would be something there that would say, gee, I would have really liked to got to the NCAA, but there's a heck of a lot of really good small college coaches that have never gotten to an NCAA tournament game, a whole lot. And they're much better coaches than I ever was. So I was very fortunate to have a group of guys that really got better as the year went on, who took responsibility for themselves. In fact, great story about this. One of our seniors that were here was John Chang. John had torn his ACL the week before he came back to school, and it was going to be his year. He played 10 minutes a game the year before. He was going to get a chance to play a lot. And he told me, I don't think, Coach, I'm going to be part of the team because I can't get back till February. I don't think I can handle being around it. And his teammates, David Muir, one of our senior guards that year, junior guards that year, called him and said, you have to be part of this. You can get better. We'll help you. So anyway, John rehabs, ends up being able to play in the last 7 or 8 games of the year and played about 8 minutes a game, and every game made a difference. Well, anyway, we get beat at Allegheny in the last regular season game of the year. We're upset. We know we got the tournament coming up. And Chang, the bus ride home is quiet. And the next day, Chang calls Chris, my assistant, and gets our huddle pass, and he makes the team get together to watch video of Wittenberg. So we're prepared. Then we beat Wittenberg that Wednesday or that Tuesday, and then go on. And I think that was kind of, that we had an attitude. That team had an attitude, even though they screwed up a little bit. We screwed up a little bit that last game. This is how we're going to do it. So knowing those kind of things, had we lost that game, I don't know that it would have made a big difference, because I had those kind of kids. David Muir talks Chang into, you've got to be part of this team. We need you whether you're on the floor or not. Chang rehabs his ass off, comes back, plays well in the last 6-7 games, and takes a leadership role, in getting us ready for the tournament. Jet Spielman, a kid who transfers in from Ashland, but took coaching the way we coached him when we got on him about things, didn't play the role of I'm better than everybody, and just is a stud for us, and I can go on and on. Sean Carlin was on that team 40 minutes in 4 years. He's our best leader, all that kind of thing. So now I don't think I'd have big regrets. I think you always wonder. Hell, I still wonder about some JV games I lost as a JV coach at DeSales. If I would have done this or that, would we have won? So, we all do that crap to ourselves.
Sure. Well, I just think the question is a question I always like to ask given the opportunity, because it seems like in this culture, Coach, that we live in, the guys that talk about, winning a title doesn't make me a better coach than not winning. They're the ones that won the title. Roy Williams can say, I finally won a national title, but I'm not a better coach than I was yesterday. Well, he never made those statements when he was not winning the title. And Jay Wright, same thing. And I'm not taking – those guys do it for the right reasons, and they do it the right way, and they have success. But you're right. There are so many really good guys that don't make the NCAA Division III tournament or don't win their conference tournament or don't win their league, but they do great things. And we oftentimes in this society, we evaluate just on the basis of a scoreboard or a ledger sheet. With the W's and the L's, and I just think that's unfortunate, and I really do believe that it's not fair, but it's what we have. So I really appreciate you sharing that perspective. Go ahead, Coach. I'm sorry.
No, I just think we need to get to the point in this world. You know, when I was a kid growing up, people used to tell me, you know, money's not that important. It's people. And everybody tells you that stuff, and yet everything we do, the way we live, it comes down to how much money.
Yeah.
And you have coaches tell you, Bob, it's not about winning, it's about doing it the right way. But you do it the right way and you don't win, you might lose your job. And you've got to be willing, okay? You've got to make a choice. And I tried to make the choice my whole career of just doing it the right way. And if I lost my job, I lost my job. And I was close a few times at both places. But you know what? It worked out. I was lucky. It worked out. I was lucky. I had a spouse that absolutely supported me through all that. She's been unbelievable. And friends who stood by me. But, we've got to start acting the way we say things. And when we tell people winning isn't everything, then let's go. And let's embrace that too. And I want to win as much as anybody. And I think winning is really important, but not at the expense of doing things a certain way and treating people a certain way. I'm convinced of that. So, yeah.
Amen to that, Coach. I just got a couple questions left. And
sure.
One
sure.
is that and you know, we prepared to play when I was at Northern this year, we prepared to play your team. And I could do an hour podcast on your little diamond setup kind of motion offense that you guys ran because I really liked it and I could get lost in the X's and O's. But it leads to my question is, as a kind of a motion guy with a game that has changed the way it has in the last 10 to 15 years, talk about the way the game has evolved and developed at the college level. Are there some things that you see about the changing of the game and the way it's evolved as good and some that you see as not so good?
Well, I think the way people can shoot the three, and I think that's probably been good. I really do. But I've been a motion guy forever, and we do it different ways. And honestly, our offense was a heck of a lot better at the end of the year than when we played you guys early because we added some high post pinch stuff that we always usually get to. It just anyway.
Well, I'm glad it was better at the end because we barely got out of there with a win.
But you know, I'll be honest, John, I think the biggest thing, if you would have asked me 10 years ago, offensively, what's the most important thing, I would have said moving and screening. Now, I would say by far spacing. Constantly keeping your spacing. And we actually talk to our guys sometimes about not moving is better than moving. Now, we don't just stand, but you have to do some intelligent standing around before you just move. So I think spacing is crucial, and forcing teams into closeout situations is a big deal to us. So I think that's been really good for the game, the spacing part. I think the three-point line, and I think moving it back is probably a good idea because guys are getting pretty skilled, and so now you aren't going to just have guys standing out there popping, but they're gonna, you know, it's got to be a little more of a skill thing. So I think it's good. I wouldn't mind seeing the lane widened in college basketball. I think that could help with some of it. It's still pretty physical inside. I think that could help with some of that and force skill. Anytime skill become, I think skill has got to, it's a skill game. So I like physicality, but not to the point where people are just beating the crap out of each other and it becomes kind of ugly. So I would like to see the wider lane. I really think it'd be okay. The other change I wouldn't mind seeing, and again, I wouldn't have said this 10 years ago, but I'm not so sure it's not time for a shot clock at the high school level. I'm starting to feel that just because I go to so many games where guys just hold the ball, don't let the kids play. And I just believe it's a game that was meant to be played. Now, I don't believe in turnovers. I believe winning's more important than anything. So I was one of those guys, if I would have had to hold the ball to win against a better opponent, I'd do it. And I still would do it. But the bottom line is, if you teach your kids how to play well, when the shot clock went from 35 seconds to 30, because we milk it down a lot, we get down to a lot of late possessions, late shot clock possessions. A lot of people said to me, boy, that 5 seconds is going to affect you a lot. Didn't affect us a bit. We pushed the ball up the floor a little bit faster, but we still got our spacing. We still got the ball moving. We had intelligent movement and good screening. I think you can still get good shots. And if you watch teams like the Warriors and the Spurs play, They play the 24-second clock, and they don't take a lot of bad shots. They just don't. They know who should be shooting, how they should be shooting it. So, to answer your question, I think the 3-point line is probably. I really think it's been good for the game. It's opened some things up. I think it was time to move it back, but I think spacing is the most important thing offensively that you can do. Intelligent spacing and getting the ball to move vertically, so you're going inside out or you're driving it and kicking it out. I think is what creates problems for defenses.
Coach, I love the answer, right? Because I had planned on asking what would you like to see change, maybe that hasn't changed, I'm a lifer and I'm a junkie, so the little detail things like that are always going to be things that intrigue me, and I've never been an advocate for the shot clock in high school because I always had teams that were lesser talented.
Right.
The further I've gotten away from that, the more I've embraced the idea of a shot clock, just because I especially if you're going to play quarters. Because I always feel like at the high school level and in the women's college game, if there wasn't a shot clock, the four quarters means four opportunities total to hold the ball for way too long at the end of a quarter and have poor execution. I think the shot clock would make high school coaches become better coaches, and it would force high school players to become more skilled, more well-rounded players if they want to play.
I
believe in it wholeheartedly now, and I wouldn't have said that maybe even 5 years ago, certainly not 10.
No, I would. You know, my guys at Reedy, if they ever hear this, they will be dumbfounded. Because I used, even with our really good teams, at the end of the quarter, we would run something called tempo where we pull our motion high, and I would make them run it until we got a backhand for a layup. And we always did, which was great, but it pissed them off because we'd be on a run, and they wanted to play, and they I'll get together those guys now and then with some of them, have a couple of beers, and they'll mention that. We hated that, coach. We hated it, you know, and I just laugh at them. Well, if they know now that I think we'd have a shot clock, they would kill me. So hopefully none of them hear this.
Well, I hope they all listen, because that's good for me if we get lots of people checking out the podcast. But, you know, and I know you were a little bit hesitant about doing this, so let me just say as we wrap this up that I greatly appreciate your willingness to do it. As it turns out, we went longer than the hour that I had talked about going, but we did so because I was having a lot of fun. I hope you were too.
Oh yeah, it was good. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. I'm not used to talking about stuff like this very much, but hopefully somebody learned something from it or helped somebody else. I just, you know, it's a great game, and there's a lot of challenges right now in college and high school basketball. But I think the big thing is just decide, these are my values. This is how we're going to do things. And that's what we did at Denison. You know, when I talked about Kevin Tudor, our life coach, we went through the core value system and met every week on that kind of stuff. And it was really, really powerful for us. It really helped us get things turned.
Well, I'll tell you what, if the podcast thing goes well for me and I stay in it for a while, you may become a regular guest and we can get into those kind of conversations too, because I think core values and building your program around those certain specific things and spending time on them is something that was very in vogue for a while and I think has gone out of favor a little bit, and I think there's a tremendous value in it too. I really do.
No, we did that. I mean, you ask our Denison guys what's their purpose, and they'll tell you it's to become selfless, educated, men of character and action. And that's how we coached. You know, everything we did on the floor, off the floor was based on that. Our style of play, you know, who they, you know, all those things. And it really helped us change. It helped us get better. They had a focus and they knew what it was. Doesn't mean they were angels. Doesn't mean we didn't have issues. We have our share of issues. But that kind of thing really, really helped us out. So,
As I said, Coach, I absolutely had a ball. I hope maybe we can stay in touch a little bit after this.
Yeah.
And certainly if I get a chance to see you out somewhere, we'll make sure we speak. But I'll tell Guy Neal you said hello. He and I are going to get together again in about a week, and I'll make sure that I pass that along. And you take care of yourself. And again, down the road, maybe if we get a chance, we'll see where things go. And maybe I'll reach out again, but certainly hopefully we can stay in touch.
All right. I appreciate it, John.
Okay. Thanks. Appreciate it, Coach. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thanks so much for listening again today. If you would like to listen to previous or future episodes of the Talking Hoops with Coach John Cook podcast, you can listen on Spotify or Google Podcasts, as well as several other podcast platforms. Please review, rate, and subscribe. And if you would like to support the podcast financially, you can do so at anchor.fm/John-Cook. That's JON-COOK0. anchor.fm/John-Cook0. Thanks again. Hope to talk hoops with you again real soon.